sparks deluge for me, because if I look at a screen for more than 30 minutes, I feel dead inside. I gave him a brief rundown of the response we'd gotten and how I'd brought in Fee to help out until I found someone. He's a good kid. A lot of potential. I think he learned a tattoo from some cousin of his. It's unclear. He never talks about himself. Doesn't talk that much, period, actually. But he's really serious about the work. I like that. I guess maybe he'd stay longer if I wanted. He definitely needs some money. No way he gets much work at the West Philly shop. I think he only works one day a week there. Anyway, the extra business is great, money-wise. I funnel basically everything I make into buying out the lease on the shop, but there are repairs and supplies and... I looked up, suddenly aware that I was talking while staring out the window. Jesus, sorry. I'm doing it again. Sometimes I process out loud. I'm just usually alone in my apartment, so I don't subject others to it. I shook my head at myself. In truth, I was stressed as hell. And this was what happened when I started to creep near the edge of what I could handle without losing my shit. It started leaking out verbally. I knew the signs. I was painting whenever I wasn't tattooing, and as a result, I wasn't sleeping much. I was getting more and more anxious about any small thing that took up time I felt like I didn't have. Showering, laundry, waiting for the train. Hell, I was starting to get impatient when it took a few seconds for my shampoo to lather. At the shop, I was usually good. Having something to do kept me calm, and there was always a clear next step. And outside the shop? Well, there was no outside the shop. There hadn't been for a long time. Hey, Ginger. Christopher bent down, leaning close to me over the counter. His gorgeous eyes were soft, and I got lost in trying to figure out what paints I would combine to get those colors. Huh? Come here. Why? He rolled his eyes at me. You're the most contrary human being I've ever met. Did I mention that yet? Still distracted, I walked around the counter, and he pulled me into the storage space behind it. What are we... Christopher nudged me against the wall and kissed me, swallowing my words. I grabbed his shoulders and he wrapped an arm around my waist and his mouth was hot and the scrape of his stubble electrified my chin. I slid my hands into his hair as he tipped my head back and kissed me deeper, pressing us together and sliding a hot hand up my spine under my sweater. Okay, I said, breathless and dazed when he pulled away. That's a great reason. He smiled and I touched his dimple. It made his eyes go kind of soft, and he dropped his forehead to my shoulder, then eased away. Do you want to come to Thanksgiving at my parents' house? He asked, and I froze, totally surprised. Holy shit, that was tomorrow. And I hadn't ever told Eva whether I was going to Mom and Dad's, and Christopher was asking me to... Okay, before you panic. I'm not panicking. I was 100% panicking. And I wasn't exactly sure why. Hell, I'd been looking for an excuse to avoid my own parents' Thanksgiving, and here one was. But it was so soon, and the way he'd asked was so casual. Like, maybe he would invite any friend or coworker or whatever we were. And what were we? Everything had seemed like it was going well, but I found myself unable to trust it. Unable to believe the other shoe wasn't about to drop. My heart was pounding. I was suddenly far too warm and my thoughts were scattered. But one emerged. I didn't want to be just a friend who got taken home like a stray dog. I wanted it to mean something. He snorted. Your eyes just got this big. No, it's... Your parents seem great. Just... I... can't. Christopher threaded his fingers through my hair. You have to go to your family's? I nodded, because of course that was a totally reasonable explanation for why I couldn't go. I was distracted by the roiling in my stomach that I'd made the wrong call. But Christopher seemed unbothered, if a little disappointed, and skinned his palm down my arm to take my hand. Okay. Well, so no Thanksgiving. How about dinner? Tonight, I'll cook for you. I swallowed, forcing myself to stay in this conversation, even though my brain was still stuck on attempting to process my Thanksgiving freakout. Ugh, I can't. I have clients until, like, 11. His jaw tightened.
How about breakfast tomorrow?
I have to paint. I'm so behind. My voice sounded strange, and I had kind of slumped against the wall. Christopher nodded, but the tightness in his jaw remained.
I get that you're busy. I guess I just thought maybe now that you got some more help in the shop, you might have time to actually, you know.
He gestured between us. It was the actually that turned my confusion to anger, at the idea that what we'd been doing so far wasn't, what, real enough for him? My stomach soured, and I wanted to punch that actually right in the throat, because this was the most actually I'd gotten in a very, very long time. But it seemed as though what felt like so much to me wasn't much to Christopher at all. I bit my lip as anger slid into something like shame. And shame was the one thing I absolutely refused to feel. Shame meant that I was feeling bad about who I was, and I'd worked to combat that for too long. Shame was the canary in the coal mine that signaled I was in danger of letting someone else's opinions or expectations determine what I thought was valuable, instead of my own. He must have seen it in my face, because he backed off and raised his hands.
All I meant,
look, I said, because I was pretty sure that all I meant was not ever the beginning of a comment that was going to fix anything. Yes, I'm super busy right now, and yes, I get that it sucks if you want to hang out, and I can't. But my career and my art were part of my life long before I ever met you, and I'm not just going to completely abandon them because you suddenly have several hours free tonight that you want me to also be free for. It came out slightly harsher than I'd intended, but I wasn't going to apologize for the shop being busy and for having other interests. I wasn't going to apologize for not dropping everything in favor of date night. Christopher nodded once, all stoically gritted teeth and tight shoulders.
I should have given you more notice, I realize.
His voice was formal, distant.
I apologize.
He walked back out into the shop, his spine iron, looking straight ahead. Marcus had been casting glances at me all during work. He could tell something was wrong. He always could. We'd both stayed late to finish large tattoos, and were wiping down our stations quickly, since it was almost midnight. I was mentally calculating how many hours of sleep I could realistically get if I wanted to get up at 7 a.m. to paint, when I knocked into my table, sending three bottles of ink to the floor, one of which splattered on my boot. Not that it mattered, since both were black, but I swore loudly and kicked the base of my chair, which hurt a lot. When I looked up, Marcus was a step away from me. He was looking at me with such a familiar expression it almost jolted me back in time.
Honey, he said, what the hell's going on?
And damn, it had been a long time since he'd called me honey. I gestured to the ink splattered on the floor, and he just stood there, waiting me out. Fucking Christopher, I said finally, and flopped heavily into the chair I'd kicked. Making me feel guilty for being too busy to have dinner with him. Like, I'm just going to cancel on my clients. I mean, he knows the hours I work. It's not a surprise. And then he's all fucking pouty eyes, rigid jaw with his fucking fragile ego. Like it was an insult against dating to not be free. Marcus nodded and stepped behind me, put a hand on each of my shoulders, and started digging into the knots there with his thumbs. Like, I'm working on my stuff for a show. I have a deadline. I can't just blow it off. Even if it'd be nice to have someone make me dinner for once. I slumped forward. He always pressed just a little too hard, and it always felt amazing. He went to culinary school. So, it'd probably be a good dinner, too, I said regretfully. Plus, he was clearly raised to eat balanced meals. I sighed, the sensation in my back leeching away a bit of my anger. Oh, I was so mean, I said, totally interrupted him, shut him down. Oh, I was such a dick. Dude, I really freaked. Marcus made a sound and said he was listening and kept rubbing. There were certain spots where we were always sore, always aching. Places that the job hardened as it turned our bodies into tools. After rubbing my shoulders for a few minutes, Marcus just rested his palm on the back of my neck, and I breathed out the anger like a poison cloud. Without the anger, there was just fear. Fear of being rejected. Fear that someday I'd get so lonely I'd compromise in ways I didn't want to. Fear that I'd be so afraid of compromising when I shouldn't that I'd refuse to compromise when I should. If that's what he wants from me, then it'll never work, I said softly. Marcus sat on the stool where I usually sat and faced me, and it seemed right that he'd be the one I told. He knew how I was in a relationship. He was the only one who did, really.
Do you want it to?
I covered my face with my hands to try and focus the 6 million lines of thought that zinged around my head whenever I thought of Christopher. Even his name sounded like some kind of incantation. I fucking like him so much. Damn it. At first, I was kind of like, oh, a cute white dude at a coffee shop? Yes, I'll take a quad shot and look at you, please. And then I shook my head. Somewhere along the line, without my even noticing, Christopher had gotten completely under my skin. I started thinking about him at random moments, realizing that I was taking him into account when I considered options and, okay, yeah, fantasizing about him. When we'd hooked up after our drink and draw date, it had been hotter than I'd expected. Christopher was so kind, so, I don't know, Christopher-like, that I'd sort of expected him to be a little vanilla. In reality, he'd been anything but. It had been explosive, impassioned, a little sloppy, and heavily laced with the promise that the next time would be even better, especially without the heaps of garbage nearby. But next time hadn't happened yet, and at the rate I was free, it never would. We occupied different worlds, and I had no guarantee that Christopher got mine. I guess I had no guarantee that I got his, either. It was just so easy with you, I said, even though it wasn't true. And Marcus's wry smile said that we both knew it.
Some things were, he granted, giving my hand a squeeze. You going to your parents tomorrow, since Daniel's not around?
I groaned. In my angst about Christopher, I'd totally forgotten that in a clearly addled state, I'd told Christopher I was. Eva called to guilt me into it like 16 times, and she kept insinuating that maybe something is wrong with my dad. She won't say for sure, which is fucking typical of her. I actually haven't seen any of them since my dad's birthday, and that was 6 months ago, so now I feel like I should go. Just in case something really is wrong. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, have a good time at Celine's, folks. Enjoy everyone trying to fatten you up. Marcus grimaced and wrapped his arms around his skinny frame. Celine was fat and gorgeous, and her whole family was fat and gorgeous, and her mother and sisters treated Marcus like his skinniness was down to some kind of wrong-minded stubbornness. Still, they adored him, and the feeling was totally mutual, so he put up with being called every variation of skinny on the planet. Grateful, they also called him him, and thought of his faster-than-average metabolism was the only regrettable thing about his body. We hugged goodbye at the door, and I squeezed him tight. Thanks.
Ginge, he said seriously. Everybody has their shit. Don't make the mistake of thinking he doesn't just because it isn't the same as yours. Christopher. Jay. I'm writing from that ancient PC in my old room at Mom and Dad's, and there's a good chance that it will short out before this email gets sent. Okay, so it's good you didn't come to Thanksgiving, I think. Mom had some serious holiday manic shit going on, and it would have driven you up the wall. Hopefully she got it out of her system, so she'll be a little calmer at Christmas. Dad was in heaven, of course. You know how he loves it when there are a bunch of people around. He and the brothers got tipsy on Yuengling and watched a lot of football, but they kept fighting about overtime rules because they forgot they were watching pro instead of college. They are ridiculous. I invited Ginger to come, and she said no. Cringe. Probably it was way too soon, huh? I think it freaked her out. How long had you and Scott been dating before you asked him to come to Thanksgiving? Or, shit, knowing Scott, he probably just told you he was gonna come and then did it. That fucking guy. Remember the next year when Scott came with you and Jen came with me? She was so into him. She was all like, Scott seems like such a stable presence and so good for Jude. Meanwhile, what she actually meant was that she wanted me to propose like Scott did. Shit, man. Did we actually hide in your room and plan the joint breakup speech we were going to deliver, or was I just really high? So, Ma was saying something about how she called and spoke to one of your doctors? I'm not totally clear on what happened, because I don't actually think they're allowed to give out any medical info on you, are they? Or maybe they are if Mom and Dad are your next of kin, or emergency contacts or something, but I kind of figured that you would have made Casper your person for that stuff. Well, anyway, whatever Mom found out, she's now talking about you coming home in time for Christmas, so if that isn't right, can you just let me know? I don't want to get her hopes up if it's not going to happen, and I don't want her to guilt you into it if you don't think you're ready to leave. Do you think you're ready to leave, Jay? It'd be great to know how you're doing. I hope you're feeling a little better, anyway. Okay, bro, more soon. Love you. See.
Chapter 9. I spent the train ride home from Thanksgiving with my parents, caught between periods of silent staring and bouts of near manic laughter, and everyone else on the train seemed to be in similar spirits. Dinner had been as precisely as awful as I'd expected, but because I'd been dreading some health crisis bomb to go off, I was relieved that it hadn't. My dad seemed to be fine, aside from his chronic spinelessness, but that wasn't any more acute than usual, so I wasn't sure what Eva had been smoking. Maybe she just wanted something to be concerned about. God knew it wouldn't have been the first time. When I got above ground, I just stood for a minute, breathing in the autumn air, looking up and down Broad Street at the lights of the theater marquees and hotel bars. I pulled out my phone, took a deep breath, and texted Christopher. I have an indecent proposal for you. Also, an apology. I knew he was at his parents', but it was nearly 9, and I was hoping maybe they'd eaten early. My phone pinged almost immediately.
I only accept apologies in person.
Then you'd better take me up on the indecent proposal. I realized I was grinning, cleared my throat, and walked down South Street toward home.
You have my full attention, he wrote.
Okay, here goes. Do you want to come over and consume even more food than we already have? I know of a magical place that can save Thanksgiving. Then, remembering that he actually liked his family, I added, make it even better if it was already good.
I can be there in 20.
Just come up the fire escape. I hurried the last few blocks home, stopping at Cinder's on the way. It was operated via a fold-down counter out of a window in a building it shared with a sex toy shop. The non-sex toy shop half of the building had been partially burned out back in the 90s, and the owner took the insurance money and abandoned it. A few years later, Cinder's simply appeared, open for business one day where there had been nothing the day before. It had just been regular burritos at first, or so I'd heard, but the holiday burritos had been so popular that the owner, who we all just called Cinder's, went with it, introducing more and more holiday burritos and taking the non-holiday days as, well, holidays.
Hey, if it ain't the walking billboard,
Cinders called as I walked up, thick South Philly accent curling his vowels. And if it ain't the man who does the best holiday wrapping on South Street. He held out a hand through the window and I squeezed it.
Where's your buddy this Thanksgiving?
He moved, man. Got a job in Michigan, teaching.
No kidding. Wow, good for him.
Damn.
You tell that one I said well done, you hear?
I liked him. Smart kid.
So, won this year? Nah, better make it two. I'm inducting a first-timer into the world of Cinder, so I want him to get the full effect. He pointed at me with his knife. Good thinking. Two, then. With everything? Everything meant turkey, sweet potato roasted with brown sugar, cornbread stuffing, and cranberry sauce. Everything. Listen, he said as he handed me a bag with two huge warm burritos. I'm doing solstices now. Tell your friend, a pretty black girl who likes horoscopes, I'm going to have moon burritos on the winter solstice. They're vegan, okay? Longest night of the year, plenty of time for eating burritos. You tell her. Morgan, I said, smiling. She'd become the newest Cinder's convert when I'd brought her for Rosh Hashanah burritos in the fall. It turned out black beans went surprisingly well with apples and honey. I'll tell her. Yeah, Morgan. Moon burritos, he murmured meditatively. Ah, okay. Happy Thanksgiving. You enjoy now. Thanks, I called and blew him a kiss over my shoulder. I got to the shop door just in time to see Christopher get out of a battered orange truck. Hey, I said, walking over. You know, I just realized I have no idea where you live. He locked the truck, holding the handle while he kicked the bottom left corner of the door in what was clearly a familiar maneuver. I live just the other side of the Italian market, but I'm coming for my parents in Germantown. We faced off for a minute, the awkwardness of our last exchange making me feel like it'd be weird to touch him, but kind of just wanting to slide my arms around him. I held up the burritos, and he nodded. He followed me upstairs. It was awkward, and I didn't bother trying to make conversation as I let us in and shed my coat, put the burritos on plates, and poured bourbon into two glasses. I deposited it all on the wagon wheel coffee table, avoiding eye contact. I was still wearing the gray sweatshirt dress I'd worn to dinner, and I wanted to change into pajamas, but it felt strange to do when things were strained between us. Too vulnerable to be in pajamas when he was in clothes. I settled for unzipping my boots and tossing them next to the closet. When I looked up, Christopher was looking at the art in my apartment. It was mostly work I'd traded for my own or traded for tattoos. Jonah's Day of the Dead Animals, Nika's glitter-crusted skulls, Willa's leather masks, Mikaela's collages of outer space. My favorite was by a guy whose name I never even knew, though it was signed JMB. It was a nude of a beautiful, fleshy man reclining in a throne made out of half a bathtub, every inch of his skin intricately tattooed, bubbles from the bath clinging to his inked skin. His eyes were distant and his expression ecstatic. I traded two of my paintings for it at an art show years ago, the last show I'd done. Wow, Christopher said, coming to stand in front of the nude. I am so in awe of artists. I don't know how you do it at all. Not just the technical side, but the whole thing. How certain things present such opportunity. Well, you do that with food, don't you? See the opportunity of how certain flavors go together? He turned toward me, brows drawn together. I guess a little. I never thought of it as being the same. Before I could respond, he said, Hey, can we make the apology part of this old John so we can get on to me asking about how your Thanksgiving was? I nodded and sat down on the couch, but instead of sitting beside me, he sat on the leather armchair across from me. I won't apologize for not being free or for wanting to paint. But I'm sorry I was so mean about how I reacted. I implied that you expected something of me, that you had some kind of, I don't know, menacing ulterior motive or something, which was super unfair. You didn't do anything to make me think that. At all. Ever. I reacted that way because of me and my brain, and not because of you. So, I'm really sorry. Thanks, he said. I accept your apology. And I accept what you're not apologizing for. I know I sprung those invitations on you at the last minute, and I really wasn't expecting you to drop anything to hang with me. Just hoping, I guess, that you might be free. I nodded, glad I'd been right about him.
He stood and pressed a kiss to my lips, thumb stroking my cheekbone, then sat down beside me.
So why do you react that way? Have other people you've been in relationships with made you feel shitty for working? Or I snorted and muttered, what other relationships?
Christopher's gaze sharpened.
You haven't dated people much? How come?
I dropped my head back on the couch and sighed. What I really wanted was just to talk to Christopher without thinking too much. I wanted us to know each other already, rather than having a state of the union about our relationship. Well, I dated Marcus for almost a year, a lifetime ago.
Marcus from the shop, Marcus?
I nodded. Yeah, that's it for long-term relationships. Mostly I've dated people for, shorter periods.
Why so short?
Oh, sometimes because after I got to know them a little, I realized I didn't like them after all, or that I'd rather be working on art or tattooing. Sometimes because it just fell apart. Like, I'd stop being willing to put in the effort, or it would start to feel like an obligation. I'd get claustrophobic.
How long did you usually date them for?
About a month. We both looked at each other, realizing that a month was about how long it had been since we'd met. Then Christopher shot me a cocky grin, like he was determined to beat the odds, and relaxed back into the chair.
Well, you are pretty bad at it.
Huh?
Dating, I mean. I basically had to beg you to go out with me, and when you finally did, you flashed everyone else in the room and then ravished me in a filthy alley.
I laughed, and then remembered a conversation I'd had with Daniel, and laughed even more. Oh, man, I said. I gave Daniel all this dating advice, and I was so serious about it, like, I wagged my finger and made my expression stern. Wear these jeans, and don't swear too much, and all this shit. I started laughing harder, and Christopher chuckled too.
I have to tell you a secret,
he said.
I have no idea why, and I don't want to analyze it honestly. But I find it ridiculously hot that you have such a filthy damn mouth. I mean, filthy.
I opened my filthy damn mouth to comment, realized I was about to swear in response, realized that would be ridiculous, and closed it again. Christopher leaned in and ran a thumb over my lips, then kissed me.
Okay, so what's this indecent proposal?
I was pretty ready to abandon the burrito in favor of other pursuits, and I forced myself to refocus on the matter at hand. This, I pointed, is the Thanksgiving burrito. If I were you, I would prepare to have my mind blown. Of course, if you ate an actual delicious Thanksgiving dinner, then the effect is admittedly not quite so shocking. It's true that Cinders kind of caters to those of us who need the holidays redeemed, and a burrito is the ultimate redemption.
I ate a pretty good Thanksgiving dinner, he confirmed. But that was hours and hours ago, and I can always eat.
Why do Christians do that?
Huh?
That they eat dinner at lunchtime thing on holidays? It's so weird.
Jews don't do that?
No way, man. Our shit doesn't even start till sundown. He laughed.
I don't know, because my family's always done it. I guess I thought everyone did that. Though you're seeing one reason it's a great idea right here. I get to half my cake and eat it, too.
That's not what that saying means.
I get to eat my cake and then eat it again? How's that?
Yum, cake. So, go. I gestured him toward the burrito. He took a bite, and a slow smile spread across his face as he chewed.
That is somehow perfect, he said.
I could almost see the cogs turning as he started to imagine how he could riff on it in deli sandwich form. Right? Yay. Also, do not steal the burrito from Mel, or I'll have you blacklisted. He grinned and held up his free hand in peace. Now that I knew he wasn't an idiot who couldn't accept an apology or appreciate the burrito, I unwrapped my own and started eating. I was starving.
So, can I ask about how your Thanksgiving was now? Or is there some kind of hallowed no-talking-while-burritoing rule I should be aware of?
It was garbage. Thanks. And yours? I tore off a huge bite of my burrito so I couldn't speak.
It was great. Thanks. Garbage how?
Well, my cousin Tamara, who's 6 years younger than me, just had her third child. She's married. My cousin Neil got a promotion at the advertising firm he works at, so now he's been able to put a down payment on a loft in Center City. Janie, the Johnson's next door's daughter, is getting her master's degree in urban planning, which is both academically impressive and extremely useful in today's competitive job market. Kenneth, the neighbor's kid from across the street, just got married to the nicest woman, and they're going to be decorating the nursery in lavender and mint. Did you know those colors are very on trend for a nursery? Very on trend. Let's see. Oh, the Roscoes up the block? Their daughter just made partner. She's 2 years younger than me. And all of them keep in what seems to be near constant communication with their parents about everything they do.
Yikes.
Yeah. My mom can somehow remember every accomplishment of every person between the ages of 18 and 40, but can't remember the name of my shop. The brain is a complex and mysterious organ. I tap my head in faux confusion.
You're wicked successful. Did you tell him about how busy the shop is and how that Eddie guy is promoting you? About your art show?
They don't care about that stuff. Those aren't real accomplishments. At Christopher's look of surprise, I explained. My parents hate tattoos. Well, my mom does. My dad wouldn't have an independent opinion if it begged him. She thinks they're ugly and disgusting. When I left school at 16 to apprentice, they didn't speak to me for months. And when they did, my mother cried every time she saw me because it was just so hard for her that I would never amount to anything. It's terrible for a parent when their child totally disappoints them, did you know?
Fuck. I'm sorry. That's awful. They should be so proud of you. Would they have felt the same if you hadn't left school?
It wouldn't have been quite as bad, probably.
They were horrified.
Like, spit over their shoulders, don't speak my name, horrified. I swear to God, in another life, my mother would have loved to be a voodoo practitioner. She said I was throwing my life away. That I was chasing a stupid dream. I mean, at least if I'd run away to Hollywood to try and be a movie star or something, they could have understood the impulse. Even though, no doubt, my mom would have told me I'd never make it because movie stars are thin and beautiful. Still, she could have understood. But tattoos? I might as well have dropped out of high school to be a garbage collector in her mind. Not that there's anything wrong with... Yeah, I get it. Christopher said, patting my arm. His expression darkened.
I am, in this moment, honestly not trying to flirt with you, though I'll start trying again after this moment. But I don't get this thing you keep saying about your mom and your looks. You're gorgeous. Your skin and your hair and your, God, those big brown eyes and your fucking mouth. I don't get it.
He shook his head, and a wave of warmth washed through me. It was the nicest non-flirting I'd ever heard. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you think so. But here, look. I pulled out my phone and found a picture of my mom and Eva that I'd taken earlier that evening. They stood flanking the oven, both looking slightly off to the left because the doorbell had rung. I took the picture because they looked so hilariously like each other. They could have been twins. My mom in a lavender cardigan and khaki capris, Eva in a lemon-yellow cardigan and khaki capris, both of them with their arms crossed loosely in front of them. This is my mom, this is Eva. She's my mother's clone. They even got the same haircut, see? Mother-daughter spa day, you know? And no, I wasn't invited, but it's the haircut my mom always gets, so now Eva looks about 50 years old. She's the office manager for a big tech company in Center City and has appropriate 9-to-5 things to say about her job. Not, mind you, that she couldn't have done better, as my mother points out from time to time when she's feeling particularly poisonous and I'm not rising to her bait in a satisfying manner. Eva's very smart and could have run the company.
Jesus, your whole voice changes when you do that mom impression thing.
It's creepy. Ugh. Yeah, it's a nightmare. I can hear her voice in my head. Ginger, you know, if you just lose 10 pounds, then maybe your tattoos would look like an avant-garde statement instead of a desperate attempt to thumb your nose at society's standards of beauty before men reject you for being unconventional-looking. Ginger, if you insist on spending all your time at that tattoo store, then you'll never expand your horizons and meet a different class of people. Oh, Ginger, you were such a smart girl. What happened? Ginger, you may think everything is fun and games now, but what will happen when you wake up 20 years from now and you're an old lady covered in tattoos who's wasted her life and ended up totally alone without accomplishing anything? I crossed my arms over my chest and slouched down on the couch. That last comment had sounded a little less like my mom than I'd expected. Christopher put down his plate and slid next to me on the couch. Come here. He took my plate off my stomach and pulled me against him. Then he proceeded to give me the world's nicest hug. Fuck, he murmured. And I don't think I'd heard him use the word before. I think your family sounds kind of awful. I sighed into his neck, breathing in his smell. They are, I muttered. I hate them. I don't know why I even went. I don't know why I ever talked to them at all. They just make me feel like shit. I felt sulky and raw. Wrung out. I hated how much I could hate them and still be hurt by them. Christopher ran his hand up and down my back, and I let myself melt farther into him. I guess I always hold out this tiny little bit of hope that one day they'll magically turn into other people or something and be proud of me. It's stupid, I know. It's not stupid. It's generous. With family, it's easier if you can write them off completely, I think. Draw a firm line, but you don't just stop loving people or stop wanting them to love you just because they act badly, you know. I nodded into his shoulder and breathed in his smell. Fresh air and beeswax and the earthy smell of wool from his sweater. It was slightly too small for him, showing his t-shirt at the waist and leaving his wrist bones exposed, like it couldn't quite contain him. I lifted myself away and sat facing him, grabbing my plate again. I had barely eaten anything at dinner. Okay, anyway, tell me about your nice Thanksgiving. I want to live vicariously.
Well, you've met my parents, so you can probably guess there was a ton of food and a lot of talking over each other.
I smiled. The one time I'd been at the shop when both of Christopher's parents were there, they had been like a sitcom couple, finishing each other's sentences, talking over each other, and swatting each other affectionately. It was utterly unlike my mother's icy disdain and my father's anxious bumbling. Some aunts and uncles and cousins were there, and a friend of my mom's who's like an aunt to us. She has a subscription to every magazine under the sun, so she's always quoting them, only she'll mix up the tips from different magazines, so it becomes a ridiculous mashup, like how to remove a stain from your sexually uninhibited cat using only ultra-thick motor oil and the powers of embracing yes. We ate a lot, and there were 5 different kinds of pie. I'm a pie man, you should know. Over cake, I mean.
That was ludicrous, but I let it go for the moment. I'd had enough discord for one evening. How do you feel about ice cream?
I could take it or leave it.
So what else should I know? I'd meant to just encourage him to tell me more about Thanksgiving, but his expression grew a little shy.
I told my brother about you.
He did?
I emailed him about you. He doesn't do the phone.
Oh, man.
I told him I had a huge crush on you.
He drawled, leaning back on the couch and grinning at me. That should have sounded puerile and ridiculous, but I liked how he was challenging me. As if it was a dare, where I would have to tell him explicitly if his attention wasn't warranted.
I also told him that our date the other night was the best date I'd ever been on.
And not just because I got an original Ginger Holtzman out of the deal.
Whoa. That was unbelievably sweet.
Oh, wow. Thanks. Well, it was the best date I've ever been on, too. Hands down.
Are you guys close?
We are. I haven't actually seen him in a while. He's lived in Boston during the year and in a small town near Tanglewood Music Center in the summers for the last few years, and I've been all over the place. We were really close as kids.
He older or younger?
Older. A little over 2 years. I would drive him nuts following him around and stuff when he wanted to be left alone, but we mostly got along really well. I wanted to be just like him. He was so smart. He always seemed to understand everything. Stuff our parents' friends said, why people did stuff. He was in math classes with seniors in high school when we were still in middle school. And the piano, well, he was just unbelievable. I even tried to pretend I was bad at some of the stuff he was bad at so I'd be more like him. Like what? Like, I pretended I wasn't good at sports, even though I was. Or my dad had season hockey tickets and Jude thought hockey was boring, so I pretended I didn't want to go. He grinned. Fortunately, my dad saw right through me and made me go anyway, so I could whine about it and front like I didn't want to, but I still got to go.
God, that's so sweet of your dad.
Yep. When we were little, Jude and I did everything together. Shared everything. He rolled his eyes. He had this kind of singular focus, though, even as a kid. This follow-through. Once, we said we were going to set up all the trains in this little Christmas village thing that we'd had forever. My parents had it all packed away in the attic. We dragged out all these boxes and unpacked the stuff, and after, like, an hour, I was kind of done. But Jude spent all day on it. Maybe 8 hours setting the whole thing up. It was amazing. So intricate. It was perfect.
Christopher's eyes were wistful and far away.
I was more interested in watching him because he was so totally absorbed in it. Older brother worship or whatever. But he had this way of making me feel like whatever he did still included me. We left it up for a month and he always called it our village, as if I hadn't just sat there occasionally handing him stuff. Anyway, around the time he turned 14, everything kind of changed. He started acting so different. He stopped talking to me, stopped talking, period. He never wanted to hang out, never wanted to do anything. It was like he just switched off. He was there physically, but inside he was gone.
I slid my hand into Christopher's and squeezed hard.
I was too young to really understand what was happening. This was years before he got diagnosed. I just knew that all of a sudden he didn't want me around anymore. He'd just stay in his room and listen to music. My parents said he was just being a moody teenager, and I assumed they were right. He was older, and I figured it would happen to me, too. But it just got worse and worse. It turned out he has major depressive disorder.
That's so hard. How is he now?
Not great. He's actually in the hospital right now, in Boston, so they can keep an eye on him. Then he's coming to stay with my parents, but we're not sure when, maybe for Christmas.
He trailed off, seeming distracted by playing with my hair. Before I could ask another question about his brother, he said,
I try really hard not to stare at you because you get this boo face sometimes.
Boo face? It took me a second to register the abrupt subject change.
Yeah, like boo.
He said it like I was a ghost popping out from behind a curtain.
Like you want to scare me away. I want to, though. You're so complicated looking.
My first reaction was suspicion, but the way his eyes were moving from my hair to my face to my body felt pretty complimentary.
beautiful. I mean, like I already said. He said absently. But with all your tattoos and your hair, your face, how you dress, it's like there's so much of you going on. I always feel like I don't want to miss anything. That was me back to flirting again. That was about the best compliment I'd ever gotten. We sat on the couch and looked at each other. But instead of feeling self-conscious and irritated like I usually would with someone talking about my appearance, I felt like he saw me. Like he was looking at all the specific things that made me me. And after a few breaths, I forced myself to do what I actually wanted to do. I stopped thinking about how he was watching me and what he might be thinking about what he saw. And I started actually looking at him the way I always wanted to look at people, but usually didn't because I didn't want them to feel uncomfortable. And I hoped that he'd feel it as the appreciation I intended and not scrutiny. Faces were like tattoos, aesthetic and expressive at the same time. Faces were what they were when they were still. Beautiful, ugly, boring, interesting, and everything in between. But they were never really blank. Beauty didn't signify, but the way someone used their face, the way their face formed expressions, it interacted with their features in a way that had impact. The freckles that followed the lines of Christopher's cheekbones and crossed over the bridge of his nose were aesthetically pleasing to me, yeah. But also, when he laughed and his face turned pliable, those freckles cut a line through that expression, reminding me of a hard spine beneath soft skin. The fact that his lower lip was full was hot because it made me think of kissing him and of what else his mouth could do. But also, when he shot me the look that meant he'd found something I'd just said ridiculous, his mouth retained some gentleness, easing any barb. I traced his mouth with my finger and felt his sharp breath. I ran my fingertips over the shaved sides of his hair. It felt like velvet. And Christopher's eyes fluttered shut as I moved to run my fingers through the rest of his hair. I loved the color of it, a thick, fiery shade between russet and rust. He slid a hand into my hair and twined his fingers through my curls. His touch was tender and sure, and it made me feel like he wanted me, like anything I did would be welcome. I leaned in and kissed him, pressing him back into the couch, and he hummed into my mouth, his other hand holding me close. I wanted to taste his skin everywhere, feel the subtle change from smooth to rough and everything in between, my tongue along the shell of his ear, dipping inside at his sharp intake of breath, mapping his jaw and kissing his throat where his stubble softened. But it was so much, so overwhelming with him close. All color and line and texture and angle, smell and breath and sound. I wanted all of it, but I didn't even know where to start, and I realized I was just staring. But he didn't seem to mind. The heat coming off him was intense, and I slid a hand under his shirt, pushing it and his sweater up over his head, wanting to see him. He was beautiful. His freckled shoulders broad, chest covered in coppery hair that led down his stomach and disappeared into his jeans. He looked even bigger without his shirt on, the subtle play of muscle making his strength clear. I leaned closer, straddling his hips, and I could feel him harden against me. Christopher sucked in a breath and slid a hand over my breast, his thumb at my nipple sending shivers through me.
"Are you... nipples pierced?"
he asked, and I winked at him. Guess there were benefits to sex not had in alleys.
"Christ, can we please have sex now?"
I laughed, but the raw, aroused scrape of his voice made me shiver. "Okay." He stood up as if my weight on his lap was nothing and set me gently on my feet. For a moment, he just looked at me, pupils dilated, lips slightly parted, as if he was memorizing the lines of me. Then ran hands over my shoulders, gently, as if he were holding himself back.
"Can I?"
he asked, plucking at the fabric of my dress and nudging me next to the bed. I nodded and swallowed hard, as Christopher stripped me of my dress in one smooth move.
Jesus, you're so beautiful.
His voice was awed, his eyes roaming over my body. My heart pounded, and as his gaze ran over me, my skin prickled. He was so undeniably present, large and unmoving. He took up all the space, all my air, all my senses. But I welcomed that kind of overtaking. I welcomed the way it made my heart slam against my chest. It made me feel surrounded, enveloped, overcome. He dropped to his knees and kissed the swell of my belly, where a black and gray snake curled, and followed the line of it to my waist and up my ribs, where its tongue licked the underside of my left breast, overlaying the snake's tongue with his own. The second he got my bra off, he knelt and pressed his face to my breastbone, kissing as his stubble rubbed the insides of my breast, then turned his attention to the barbells through my nipples. His tongue was gentle, but his teeth were sharp, and every scrape and nip sent shivers through me. I shuddered when he sucked hard and pushed my chest out. He licked my nipples roughly, and I moaned as my stomach tightened, burying my hands in his hair. Suddenly, he hooked his arms under my knees, muscular thighs bunching as he lifted me onto the bed on my back. The sheer power of his body was incredibly hot, and I shivered as he moved over me. He dragged my underwear off as he trailed kisses back down to my hip bones and into the crease of my thigh. "Fuck, Ginger," he said. He kissed the tender flesh of my inner thighs, stubble scraping slightly and making the nerve endings come alive. My hips bucked toward him and I felt empty and throbbing. I wanted him inside me. I twisted a bit to one side to kick my underwear the rest of the way off and he grabbed my thigh. "If I mentioned I'm something of an ass man," he murmured hotly. He ran a rough palm over the swell of my ass and squeezed. Then he paused and leaned in closer, looking at my tattoo, and smiled. "You also said you were a pie man," I said, patting my ass. The tattoo there was a slice of cherry pie on a blue and white patterned china plate with lyrics from Patty Griffin's Making Pies curling around it in the stylized script of a 50s diner. "You could cry or die or just make pies all day. I'm making pies."
"It's true."
He licked the slice of pie.
"Now this I can have and eat too."
He nibbled at the pie and I smiled. I couldn't go any longer without touching him. I pulled his briefs down and his thick erection smacked his stomach. He was already leaking pre-cum, and his cock had a wicked curve that I hoped would touch all the right places inside me. I stroked him, and he bit his lip as the muscles of his stomach and ass clenched. Fuck, he was gorgeous. "I'm an ass woman, too," I murmured, sliding my hands over it. He had a gorgeous ass, round and muscular, and I pulled him down over me, squeezing until he groaned and shuddered, grinding his hips so the base of his erection slid in the cleft of my pussy. A tease. A promise. We kissed hard, sliding tongues and gasped breath, the scrape of stubble against my chin electrifying. My heart was racing, and I could feel it in my throat, my nipples, between my legs. A dark, hot pulse. "I want you," I managed to get out, grabbing a condom from the bedside table and holding it up. I cupped Christopher's heavy balls and ran a finger feather light up his length, watching his cock jump against his stomach. I wanted to watch him for hours, watch his unguarded reactions and the beautiful lines of him.
"Shit," he murmured.
His eyes darted to mine as I watched him intently, eyelashes fluttering in the flush that started in his cheeks, creeping down his throat. He shivered at my gaze and at his own touch as he rolled the condom on. He ran a hand from my knee up my thigh, spreading my legs wide so I was completely open to him. He slid his fingers inside me, stroking my wet folds and swirling around my clit until my hips thrust up and my knees fell apart. I was breathing heavily, my skin hot and my clit throbbing. He lowered his hips and slid inside me slowly, hard heat and pressure taking my breath away. At first, it was almost too much, but then he bottomed out inside me and I felt myself adjust to his thickness. After a few slow thrusts, I tilted my hips back and he thrust his upward, and then, on a deep thrust, the tip of his cock hit my G-spot, lighting me up. I clenched my inner muscles around him and we both groaned. "Oh, God, please," I muttered. He was breathing heavily with the effort of holding back, but at my words, he started to thrust into me in earnest, and the pressure built, friction licking my insides with liquid heat. He slid me up the bed like I weighed nothing and pulled out, licked a drop of sweat off my stomach, following its trail with his tongue. The loss of him left me feeling empty, and I reached out a hand to his shoulder. Then he rolled my hips up and kissed my clit, his stubble electrifying the sensitive tissue as he started to lick me. Jolts of pleasure shot through me, and I squeezed Christopher's shoulder. He gave another lick, then slid up my body and drove into me in one long thrust, a starburst of pleasure running through me. I swore, and he did it again, the angle perfect. On his next thrust, I grabbed his ass to keep him inside me, and his eyelids fluttered. He pulsed his hips deep inside me, and I pressed my hips up, clenching my muscles until my heart pounded.
"Touch yourself,"
he said against my lips, then kissed me as I reached between us. I slid my hand down his stomach to the base of his cock, giving him a squeeze. He bucked, and I kissed him harder, running a teasing fingertip over my clit as he moved inside me. It was perfect. The full heat of him inside me and his hard body around me. His firm chest brushed my nipples, my piercings gone extra sensitive from his teeth earlier, and I could feel my orgasm starting to collect. Thin shivers of pleasure at my nipples and clit, stronger tendrils deep inside me and in my belly. "Fuck," I moaned, and Christopher went wild, driving into me at an angle that had me seeing stars and clenching around him with every thrust. I'd lost track of my body, become nothing but heat and sweat and pulse. And then his mouth was on mine. He found that perfect angle again, and then, with every powerful thrust, he hit my G-spot, the deep pleasure rippling through my core. My head was pounding, and I squeezed my eyes shut, blocking out everything except the feeling of him inside, filling me so perfectly that I never wanted it to stop. I was moaning at every thrust, and his rhythm started to falter. I knew he was close. I clenched every muscle, pushing myself there, pressing my hips up as the pulse pounded in my ears, and the first ripples of orgasm tore through me with his powerful thrusts. I clutched at Christopher's back and cried out, and he slammed into me and then held where he was, pushing even deeper inside as my muscles rippled around him. He flushed through me, and Christopher groaned as my body milked his cock. He thrust faster and faster, then froze as he came, and buried his face in my neck as he thrust a few more times, coming down. I shivered a little as gentle echoes of pleasure washed through me, and then let myself relax, boneless and fucked out on the bed. "God," he groaned, sounding totally satisfied. Then, a minute later, "Am I crushing you?" "No, I like it," I mumbled. My voice sounded thick and distant. His solid weight surrounding me, inside me, his breath on my neck. It all made me feel connected to him, and I wanted it to last. After a minute, he pulled out gently, and I felt my body readjust to being without him. He lifted me half onto his chest and ran fingers up and down my spine, finally resting one hand on my ass.